Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. My name is Kay Murray. I'll be joined tonight by Stevie Nicol and Alejandro Moreno. And the big news this evening is that Xabi Alonso is staying at Bayer Leverkusen next season. That news has been confirmed by the man himself. Let's hear more from him.
It's been a season we have had a lot of speculations regarding my future. And till now, we had so many games. We've been pretty busy, we've been pretty focused, and I wanted to use that time of the international break to reflect a little bit better and to take a decision. And last week I had a very good meeting with Simon, with Fernando, with Sermerin, when I informed them that my decision to continue being coach of Bayer Leverkusen. At this moment, I feel that this is the right place for me to be, to develop as a coach. I am a young coach, but I have to feel it. And right now, I feel that this is the right place. My job is not over here. I want to help them. I want to help the team. I want to help the young players to develop. And if I am part of the process, I'm happy with that.
Well, obviously, when it comes to Xabi Alonso and his future, there had been a lot of speculation that he would be joining one of his former clubs of Bayern or Liverpool next season. Both teams reported to be hoping to recruit him. They'll have to take their respective searches elsewhere now. But for more reaction to this news, let's get word from Archie Rintut and Arne Friedrich in Germany.
Arne, let's talk about Xabi Alonso. It's Good Friday, but it's a great Friday for Bayer Leverkusen fans, because he has decided to stay at the club for another season. Did this surprise you?
I think it's not just good news for Bayer Leverkusen, but the Bundesliga in general. So I was really happy as I heard of that. And to me, it's also for all the football romantics out there. It's just great. I mean, he decided to stay. He knows what he has with Leverkusen. And I'm really excited to see what's going to happen next year. I mean, Bayer Leverkusen had a great team. And Bayern Munich probably, it's not upset, but they're a little disappointed, I guess.
Will Bayern regret the decision to say, Thomas Tuchel, at the end of this season, we're not continuing anymore, given the candidates that are out there right now?
I doubt that, because actually from the day they announced that, first it was a little bumpy, but after that they played way different football, and I think it was the right decision to make. You see the players, they're showing a different face, and obviously now it's a very big challenge to find a proper and good coach for next season, but I think they're pretty creative and they will find a good coach.
So who's top of your list to take over at Bayern? If it's not Xabi Alonso any longer, then who's it going to be?
As of now, I would say it's Rangnick, obviously.
Ralf Rangnick, the Austria coach.
Ralf Rangnick, of course. You've read a lot about him recently in the paper, and there's a couple of reasons for that. First, he's in a really good relationship with Freund, the sporting director, and also the youth academy, the leader of the youth academy, Jochen Sauer, and also Eberl wanted to sign him 3 years ago in Gladbach, so that's a good sign. And I've also heard that his biggest wish is to become a Bayern Munich coach. So therefore, I think he's an experienced coach. And the other option, I would say, at least in my opinion, maybe Nagelsmann. Why not Nagelsmann again? So depending on the outcome of the European Championship this summer, you see his potential, what he does with teams. And I think they even regret him letting go in Munich.
We know that Roberto De Zerbi is another name that's also been linked, but we can categorically now rule out that it will not be Xabi Alonso here in Munich next season.
Thanks, guys. No, it won't. But we do have Stuart Robson with us ahead of Der Klassiker tomorrow. It's obviously Borussia Dortmund against Bayern coming up tomorrow. Stuart Robson is going to be on the call for that. But we want to stick with the Xabi Alonso news first, Robbo. What was your reaction to him staying?
I was pleased, and I think I was on the show a few weeks ago when I think Stevie gave me a bit of stick when I said he should stay at Bayer Leverkusen, because even though he's done a great job for a year and a half, he's still a very inexperienced manager. So I think he needs another year, he needs another good season at Bayer Leverkusen, build up his confidence even more, and I think he's made the right decision. He could easily have gone to Liverpool, he could easily have gone to Bayern Munich and failed very quickly, and his stock would have gone down. I think he's done the right thing. I think it's good for the Bundesliga, it's good for Bayer Leverkusen, and I think it's good for Xavi Alonso as well.
Oh, I wonder why Stevie had that little set to with
else.
Stuart Robson. I bet it wasn't somebody else. Before we get your thoughts on it, what did you make of it, Ale?
Of all the things that Xavi Alonso said in his press conference, I think what was most important towards the end of his statement was that this is about feeling. It's a feel. You can go on all the statistic and data analysis and you can have all the conversations that you want, but in the end, you have to be very comfortable with your decision because it's a decision that is life-changing for everybody. It's life-changing for Xavi Alonso, for his family, for Bayer Leverkusen and whatever club he's going to. And so, yeah, there's a lot that comes to it, but in the end, you got to trust your gut. You got to trust your heart and your soul. And in his heart and soul, that feeling that he was referring to was telling him, nah, it's not quite ready just yet to take that leap. I also think that there is something for Xavi Alonso in which he is trying to figure out and see where Bayer Leverkusen goes from here. Let's not forget that when he took over Bayer Leverkusen, they were flirting with relegation. And now, a year and change later, they are probably, potentially, going to be Bundesliga champions not too far from now. And so he has this growth and he has this upward trend with this team. I think he wants to see this through and see what happens and what becomes of this group of players and how they can build from here. He's taking on the challenge. He's taking on the opportunity. It's also a way to thank Bayer Leverkusen for providing him with the opportunity to be a manager that hadn't been quite proven at this sort of level and was given a true responsibility when they needed a manager at sort of the worst time possible. You needed a change. You went looking for a manager. You gave the opportunity to Xavi Alonso. He has performed for you, and I think in some ways Xavi Alonso is saying to Bayer Leverkusen, this is my way of thanking you and thanking the club for giving me that opportunity.
He did say at the top of that press conference, Stevie, that he is a young manager. Is this the smartest move for him right now? Well, there isn't a move.
I think if you were to sit down and write a script of how you want your coaching career to go, the majority would say, get some experience at a good level, maybe go up another level, get more experience, then maybe start challenging for a title somewhere and then getting into the Champions League. I mean, all of these things and all the things he said are really sensible, really smart and kind of the blueprint, if you could actually write it out, of the steps to get to the top. The problem is, it doesn't work that way in football. And the fact is that in 2 years' time, he could be on the heap. I mean, what if they have a complete and utter shocker next season? What if the club, which I don't believe they will...
But you really think that would put people off him, even if they did, after the season
they've had
now?
But it does. Football changes like that. I was listening to Craig yesterday, and I was dying for somebody to 100% agree with him, but nobody seemed to. Things change so quickly in football. They really do. It would shock you. If he turned around next season and they had a shocker and maybe they sell the players, but in 2 years' time, Bayern Munich job might not be available to him. Real Madrid won't be available. Liverpool might not be available. You don't often get these opportunities. And I understand saying all the right things and, as I said, the blueprint, but you know what? It doesn't come around all the time. Sometimes you only get one chance.
I understand what you're saying, Steve, but if it doesn't feel right to him, right, if because I'm sure he has had multiple conversations with those around him, but most of all, he's had conversations with himself. I'm sure there's an inner dialogue going on. And if it doesn't feel right to him to make this jump at this very moment, then who are we to say, you know what, you're missing out on an opportunity?
I'm not saying he's wrong. I'm just saying that in 2 years' time, the opportunity to be the head coach of Liverpool, Real Madrid and Bayern Munich could have long gone. Could be long gone.
OK. Stuart, what do you think of the names that are being mentioned for the new Bayern coach now that Xabi Alonso's out of the running?
Well, I quite liked what Arne was saying about Nagelsmann, because Nagelsmann was not liked by Oliver Kahn. Oliver Kahn's now going to has left Bayern Munich, so the people in charge like Nagelsmann. Nagelsmann was a good coach. I didn't think he did that much wrong at Bayern Munich. For some reason, they decided to get... There was other things going on off the field, but I think he's now back in favour. He's doing an OK job with Germany at the moment, and he's a young coach that everybody, before he got sacked last year by Bayern Munich, said was going to be a top-class coach. There's nothing that could stop him doing... Being a top-class coach, I think there's every possibility he could go back to Bayern Munich, and I think he'd be the best fit at the moment. He's a manager that knows some of those players. He did well with some of those players. He didn't do quite so well with some of those senior players, but some of the senior players might be past their best days. So, for me, Nagelsmann is the right person to go back in there.
What do you think of that, Ale? Nagelsmann going back to where he was let go so soon?
Man, I have to imagine that there are more reasons than somebody just disliking you as to why Julian Nagelsmann was let go. And while I understand that, yeah, Oliver Kahn was very much in the decision-making department of this club, there must have been other things going on. Because it's a major change, and it's a major shifting change for Bayern Munich to do that in the middle of the season in the manner in which they did. For all the things that Stewie just mentioned, that Julian Nagelsmann was thought to be this genius, that he was sort of the up-and-coming and the guy that was going to have all the answers for Bayern Munich for years to come. And then you quickly turn around and say, nah, we're not quite sure about this. I don't think it's just because Oliver Kahn didn't like the guy. There must be other things. And to go back down that path, to dip your toe back into that pool, I suppose it says that the pool of coaches out there is very limited and that you're not quite as comfortable as with the other choices, and you sort of kind of go, yeah, we'll have a little bit more of Julian Nagelsmann because at least we know him. We don't know the other guys. I don't know that that's the right way to go about making a decision.
How can you go back to a club that fired you just so soon if you are Julian Nagelsmann, Stevie?
I don't know how you do. I'm with Ali. You don't fire a guy at Bayern Munich because somebody doesn't like you. I just find that really, really hard to believe. I just don't. I've got to say, though, I nearly fell off my chair when I heard the name Ranić.
Yeah, you did.
Ranić, really? Why? Just because he want? Well, he's always said he wanted the job. I want the Liverpool job.
What happened, Stevie?
Well, apparently I don't think I'm in the running.
Oh,
but I wanted it. I nearly fell off my chair. Ranić, yeah. But the Nagelsmann one, I'm with Ali. I don't understand why you let somebody go because somebody doesn't like you. That's got nothing to do with anything. The fact that they were still in the Champions League, the fact they were still in contention to win the Bundesliga and they got rid of them, isn't because somebody didn't like them. I don't believe that.
So obviously there's a domino effect as well of Bayern not getting Xabi Alonso now that Xabi Alonso is staying put. It means Liverpool can't and won't either, Stuart. What do you think of the names that are being linked for the Liverpool job with Klopp's departure looming?
Well, I'm not sure who the managers are that they're talking about at the moment. I mean, there's not too many people that are going to do as good a job as Jurgen Klopp.
Let me throw you a few, Stuart. We've got Ruben Amorim at the top
odds.
Of that list. We've got Ruben Amorim at the top of that list there. Roberto De Zerbi's also on the list for the Liverpool job as well. They're two of the names that we're seeing linked with the Liverpool role here. Nagelsmann himself behind them. Linders, Postecoglou, Gary O'Neill and Andoni Iraola at 18-1.
It's not inspiring, is it? I mean, that's the problem. Liverpool and Klopp has decided he's had enough. But the people that they're talking about, the only one that you can really say that we've seen in the Premier League is De Zerbi to a really good over a period of time. And he's had over a year there now at Brighton. And he plays good football. They've played progressive football. He's developed players. But they've also been outplayed on occasions. They're sometimes being tactically flawed when they've been counter-attacked. So there's lots of things wrong with his game plan. But he's probably, in my view, the best of the bunch that you just talked about there. Iraola's done okay at Bournemouth. He had a poor spell, but he's starting to get much better. But it's not inspiring. If you were a Liverpool fan, you wouldn't be inspired by those people you're talking about. Maybe Nagelsmann would be a better fit at Liverpool than he would at Bayern Munich.
Stevie, what do you make of the list? Who's the best fit on the list?
I'm with Robbo on this, De Zerbi. I think the way that he wants to play, you know, the fact that Brighton have struggled this year, you know, shouldn't be that big of a shock. Come on. I mean, how do we expect Brighton to be able to play and challenge in the Premier League and be in the Champions League and Europe, whatever? It's impossible for them. And they lose the two of the best players. that the guts of their midfield was taken out. So it's not a surprise that Brighton are not quite at their best. But the fact that De Zerbi's been in England in the Premier League, the fact that the way he wants to play the game, the fact that he knows now what Liverpool's all about. It's one thing to be over the water looking, watching the TV. It's another thing to be involved in it and understanding what Liverpool's all about. So, aren't we, Robbo? I think De Zerbi's the closest thing to Klopp. And I think it's important because somebody like him has taken over a group of players that actually know all about playing the game the way he wants it to be played. So that has to be a box tick, surely.
Let me talk about Xabi Alonso not being the next Liverpool boss right now then. Is that a loss for Liverpool at this stage?
I don't think you can turn around and say this is a complete disaster. You know, let's be quite honest. Alonso doesn't have the experience of managing a giant club through a Premier League championship, Champions League, the whole thing. He's going to find out what it's like to be expected to be sitting at the top of the league and to be in the Champions League next year. This will be his first taste of that. Is that really what Liverpool need? A guy to take over a club the size of Liverpool that has no experience of dealing with so many games and a smaller squad and all of these things. So, would I have loved to have him? Yes, I would. But the fact that they're not getting him, is it the end of the world? No, it's not. I would suggest De Zerbi has got every bit of chance of keeping Liverpool successful as Xabi Alonso was.
So Xabi Alonso did the right thing in staying put at Leverkusen.
I never said that. You're turning into Thomas. Do not turn into Dan Thomas.
All right, let's
see. Can we agree that you don't want to be the guy after Klopp, though?
Yeah. I'm not in that camp.
I am.
I'm not in that camp. I really am not in that camp. I think if you can get a good man manager, a good coach, taking over a good group of players, that's different than all the other stories that we've been talking about with your Fergies and all that. That team needed broken up and starting again. But that's hard to do when you break up a team that's just won the Premier League and start again and you're expected to win the Premier League. Who does that? So I'm not in this, I don't want to follow him. It's not going to be easy, don't get me wrong. But I think if you bring in a manager who knows what it's all about, and again, I said it last week, there's two things that are the most important. One is the players. You picking the right players. You've got to bring in and get rid of the right players, which has nothing to do with the coach, really. He has some sort of say. And after that, you've got a guy who plays a type of football that every single person in that building is playing and wants to play. That's a huge start. Huge.
OK, a lot more talk about the Bundesliga and who will be the next manager of Bayern and Liverpool over on our YouTube channel. Be sure to subscribe to ESPN FC's page while you are there.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't a search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
reminder of how things look ahead of Bayern Munich taking on Borussia Dortmund on Saturday. Obviously, Leverkusen, top of the pile, 10 points ahead of Bayern, who are in second. And then Borussia Dortmund, a further 10 points behind Bayern there, 20 points between first and fourth as it stands. When it comes to the odds for the game, this is how things are looking for it. But let's get more on Der Klassiker from Archie and Anna in Munich.
Here we are in Munich, ahead of Bayern, against Dortmund, Anna Friedrich.
And usually, at least one of these two sides, mainly Bayern, is in fine fettle coming into this fixture. Neither of them are really where they would want to be right now. Let's start with Bayern. How much does this game mean to them, given what's happened to them this season?
I think they can be pretty relaxed, to be honest. I mean, it's 10 points to Bayer Leverkusen. I think they know that this season they will not win the title. This is what I assume, obviously.
Thomas Müller's playing mind games still.
Okay, maybe
team
he still
camp,
believes
but, yeah.
in it. But and maybe he's right. I don't know. But I don't believe in that. But so I think the most important for Bayern Munich is for every single player to show up in regards to the European Championship. And obviously, to me, it was also a wise choice to make just like a cut with Tuchel. I mean, ever since, in my eyes, at least I think, that they do way better than before. It seems a little bit more lighter in the team. And therefore, I think they don't really have anything to lose. The pressure, in my opinion, is on Borussia Dortmund.
Let's talk about Dortmund then. It's a huge month for them now coming up with the fixtures that they've got to play against the rest of the top five in the Bundesliga. How do you see them faring, given how they've been performing this season?
I mean, you just mentioned the top five, and regarding the fact that they have not won one game against the top five teams this Bundesliga season, it's obviously not really optimistic. And therefore, Borussia Dortmund has a lot of pressure. They are only 1 point ahead of Leipzig. They have huge pressure to cling the Champions League spots, which will be hard if you think about the opponents coming up. So therefore, they need to win. But I mean, we're in the same place today, in the same spot. Everything is as business as usual. So therefore, I'm not pretty optimistic.
Should they not make the top four, do you think that's it for Edin Terzic at Borussia Dortmund as the coach?
I would even go one step further. I would say Terzic, I agree. But also, it's going to be pretty complicated for Sebastian Kehl as a sporting director. And so they need to end up on the top four position in the Bundesliga. But as I just mentioned, I think it's going to be really, really hard.
We have to go back to 2014 for the last time Borussia Dortmund won the Bundesliga game here in Munich. So, Anna Friedrich, your prediction for tomorrow is?
I think we see some goals again. I mean, the last nine games at home, Munich won against Borussia Dortmund with 37 goals, which is a lot. So I think Bayern Munich is going to win, I don't know, maybe let's say 3-1.
3-1 was mine, so naturally I have to change my prediction and go 4-1, I think. I think Bayern Munich could get back into their groove. Let's see if Dortmund can spring a surprise tomorrow.
Let's see. Stuart Robson's still with us. We'll be on the call for that game. And let's talk a little bit about Borussia Dortmund's really bad record against Bayern at Bayern's ground when it comes to the Bundesliga. Stuart, how hard is it to overcome that mentally?
It's hard to overcome. I mean, there's been times when they've actually played quite well. And even last season, the first 20 minutes, they were dominating the game. And then the goalkeeper, Goebel, makes a terrible error. And suddenly they're 3-0 down after 25 minutes. So it is difficult to get over it mentally. But more importantly, I don't think they're good enough to get over it. Because whenever I've watched Dortmund this season, they've been too easy to counter-attack. They've got two centre-halves who have to gamble because one makes poor decisions, and that's Schlotterbeck. The other one can't run anymore, Hummels, who tries to make interceptions but can't recover. So he makes he gambles a lot, makes quick decisions, which aren't always right. They've got Emre Can as the holding midfield player who can't get around the field anymore. I don't think he's a very good holding midfield player defensively. And they haven't got quite enough in attack to make up for that. So I don't think Borussia Dortmund are a particularly good team. I think it could be a real problem for Edin Terzic to get his tactics right. Do they press the ball? Do they drop off? What do they try and do? So I've got every confidence in Bayern for winning this game. Not by much, but Dortmund really not playing particularly well. They're not a good side at the moment, even though they could get to the Champions League semi-finals.
Well, we know that Kobel can't make a mistake this time around because he's not going to be available. Neither is Daniel Malen. How big a blow is that for Dortmund for this clash?
Big. It's big. Gregor Kobel had to come into this game knowing full well that he had to make saves. After save, after save, after save. The truth of the matter is, and Robo just mentioned it, I couldn't say it any better, the two centre-backs. And believe me when I tell you that these two centre-backs have issues. We've been working and putting together a piece for tomorrow's coverage of this game, and let me just say, some of the defending is juvenile at best. They've been awful. They've been awful. The centre-back pairing of Schlotterbeck and Hummels, they expose, instead of helping each other and playing off of each other and covering for each other's mistakes, they actually amplify each other's mistakes, which, in the best of circumstances, is bad. But in the case of Borussia Dortmund, when they get exposed over a long period of time or over distance, then you're seeing the shortcomings of the speed of Mats Hummels. You're seeing the shortcomings of the positioning and decision-making of Schlotterbeck. And so then you sort of compare that and think about what the opposition is. And, yeah, it's Leroy Sané. And it's Jamal Musiala. And it's Harry Kane. And so on and so forth. And all the options that Bayern Munich has available to them in the attack, it's not a good matchup. And I'm not even talking about the midfield, because in the midfield, they just don't have the legs to cover the ground either. So look, however you want to look at this, Borussia Dortmund has difficulties matching up with Bayern Munich. I don't think that this is a game in which they get it right. I believe that Bayern Munich actually ends up winning this 3-1. And I say 3-1 because Bayern Munich, defensively, they have their own concerns and their own issues and all vulnerabilities. So they'll give up a goal in transition. But other than that, I see Bayern Munich dominating this game.
And we're just taking a look at their expected starting 11 there, Robbo. And we're looking at two different fights for them this time around, because we know that last year, Borussia Dortmund came into this game. They're in a title fight with them. As you mentioned, this year they're trying to hold on to the top four. But what are Bayern playing for right now?
Momentum at the moment. They've had a couple of three good games. They've still got to try and put the pressure on Bayer Leverkusen. I don't think they're going to catch him, because Leverkusen aren't going to lose too many games from now to the end of the season. But they've got two massive games coming up in the Champions League against Arsenal. That's going to be massive for the club. It's going to be massive for the players. And they've got to keep the momentum going. They're scoring goals at the moment. Harry Kane scored some more goals again over the last couple of weeks. They're starting to play that little bit better. They're starting to play at a higher tempo. We're seeing Musiala come back to some sort of form. Sané's not quite been as he was in the early part of the season. So he's a player that's got to try and get his form back. Kimmich has gone to right back, a position he doesn't particularly like. So there's lots of things. And Ali just mentioned the two centre-halves. De Ligt is been in and out the side, but now seems to be the number one choice. And Eric Dier, who some managers love. Mourinho loved him when he was at Spurs. The next manager didn't want to play him at all, left him out of the squad. And now he's come in for Thomas Tuchel, and he's in front of Kim, who everybody said was one of the best centre-halves in Europe last season. So it's a real change at times for Bayern Munich, but I still think they'll have enough. They've got to make sure they carry on playing well through to those games against Arsenal. And if they can get through to the Champions League semi-finals, maybe it ends up being a good season for them if they can get to the final as well.
Let's take a look at the predictions then for this game from the panel. Stevie, you have gone for a 3-1 win for Bayern. Tell us why.
Well, I think the easiest way to describe it would, you know, we just showed both sides. And clearly both sides are, their front four are better than their back six. And I look at the Bayern back six and I look at the Dortmund back six and I'm asking myself, does any of Dortmund's back six get into Bayern's? And as... Now, remember what I just said. That's where the problems are, in the back line. But there's not one... I don't think there's one Dortmund player would get in that back line of Bayern. So that's why I go for at least 3-1, because Dortmund at the back are horrendous. And if they can get the ball to the front guys, then yes, maybe they can create or score a goal or two. But Dortmund defensively are an absolute shambles. And how they are in the Champions League... still, is absolutely mind-boggling.
When it comes to the Champions League, do you think they will secure that top four spot for next season?
I think eventually they do. But I don't know that it's a reflection on Borussia Dortmund as much as it is on what's around them. And I just think that Leipzig haven't shown to be explosive enough in the attack to score enough goals to really put a run together. Now, what I would say is that Borussia Dortmund's schedule coming up is some kind of ridiculous. especially, and I think this is critical, especially when you think how poorly they have done against the top four, top five in Bundesliga this season. So is it possible that I can change my mind as I make my own argument? I won't. I'm too stubborn to do that. Borussia Dortmund, in the end, hang on, and I say barely hang on to the top four, because I think Leipzig comes up short, not so much because Dortmund does enough. I think Leipzig comes up short.
Yep, it's a bit different, the Clásica, this time around when it comes to Bayern Munich against Borussia Dortmund, but it is coming up on Saturday. You'll be able to catch our coverage from 12:30 Eastern on ESPN Plus, and then we'll be on ESPN from 1 p.m. as well, with all the build-up and all the voices you've just heard, as well as Derek Ray in the booth.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Now, let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac, weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And, boom! Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good! The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
It is a big weekend for big games as Manchester City take on Arsenal on Sunday. So let's welcome in another former Arsenal player to the show. We've got Kieran Gibbs joining us now, just taking a look at the odds for it as well. Shortest odds that City have had to win a home game in quite some time. But yeah, as I mentioned, Kieran Gibbs is with us. Kieran, great to have
Hi,
you back.
Kate. How you
we've
doing?
Got Stuart
How
Robson
doing,
here as well. We're all doing great, thank you very much. This fixture was a tough watch for Arsenal fans last season.
It was. But I kind of feel that this season, you know, might be a little bit different, just purely for the form of Arsenal and the changes that they made throughout the summer. It's almost a perfect way to see how far they've come, really, in the last 12 months or so. And somehow this game seems to have just gotten hotter every year over the last couple of seasons. I think it's boiling point now. I don't see how it gets more important than this from an Arsenal standpoint anyway. City have taken the throne, let's be honest, over the last decade. I always see things in kind of cycles, in 10-year cycles. So I'm hoping that this, you know, is a significant game that can kind of start to tip the waves in Arsenal's favour. But yeah, I mean, listen, it's a super exciting game. This one, if you would have said to the boys that lost that game last year at the Etihad that they would be in this position next season, they would have bitten your hands off. So really exciting.
It's a different team this season, Stuart. Is it different this time around for you?
It certainly is. I've seen the two games that they've played against each other in this season. The Community Shield, which people say doesn't matter, but it was the way Man City played in that. And they played exactly the same way at the Emirates, which was to try and slow the game down, play at their pace, or try and starve Arsenal of the ball. And they played out from the back too slowly. They then went back into the defenders again. They went back into midfield. And I'm not quite sure why Guardiola wanted to play that way. And then eventually they had to go longer. And that's going to be key. When they go longer from the goalkeeper into the front player, is Haaland going to get hold of the ball? Because he's up against a defender that likes to win challenges, likes to win the ball in front of Erling Haaland, and that's Saliba. I think he's probably one of the quickest and strongest centre-backs in European football at the moment. So that's going to be a key match-up. It's also going to be key whether Walker is fully fit to play in the game. Because Walker, when I look at Manchester City, when they play a high line, there's only one player that's got that great recovery pace. And that's Walker. And he's going to need it against Arsenal, because Arsenal are a good counter-attacking side.
But Stuart, Pep's confirmed today that Walker's out. Pep's confirmed it today that Kyle Walker will be out.
So that's... So that, So that's a massive blow. You know, there was talk yesterday or earlier on today that he might be playing. That's going to be a massive blow because he's the one player that's got that recovery pace. Who else does he play? He could play Lewis in there, coming in from the right back, tucking infield. He's got obviously Diaz, Akanji. He's got Ake, Guardiol, who can play there as well. But they're not the same sort of player as Walker is, who can cope with Arsenal's pace. So that's a major blow for Manchester City and Pep Guardiola. So they've got to dominate possession, but they've got to make sure they dominate possession higher up the field than they've done in the first two games against Arsenal. And that's what's given Arsenal confidence. And like Ali said about Xavi Alonso, having that gut feeling that it's the right thing to say, I've got that gut feeling that Arsenal are going to win this game.
Yeah, obviously it was 50-50 yesterday on Walker. It has been confirmed that he's out. John Stones as well. There's a few people out of this one. How does it impact things, Stevie, for City?
Not huge. I think it's all about what City do defensively to what the outcome of this game will be. And the fact that Stones is out and Walker is out is absolutely huge. And I'm 100% with Robbo. They have shown this year, and even at times with Walker playing, that against genuine pace, they struggle. So if you're Arsenal, this is huge. I mean, not only are City going to be without a couple of key players, this is an Arsenal side that this time last year had no Saliba, and obviously, middle of the park, remind me, centre midfield. Come on, place for Arsenal. Declan Rice. So this time last year, no Declan Rice, right, and no Saliba.
Right.
And you got Arsenal.
He wasn't part of the club last
that's
year.
That's why I got so confused. But I see
No,
your
I know,
point.
But that's what I'm saying. This, okay. That's why this Arsenal side, going into this game, should be looking forward to it. Not only because of what City don't have, but because of what they have. So, yeah, I think this is real tight. I think it's real hard to actually call this.
Is it strike while the iron's hot for Arsenal then?
Hold on, what did you just say?
Strike while the iron's hot.
Strike while it's hot.
Okay. Wow, my English is slipping. That is not what I understood out of that. Yes, if you're Arsenal, and I think this is key. If you're Arsenal, don't go into this game with fear or fear of failure or trying to protect. No. This is a time in which you can actually get after Manchester City. And if you had any reservations about that, if you had some qualms about that or some doubt about that, just watch the second half of the game that Liverpool played against Manchester City a couple of weeks ago. Just watch that and how Liverpool made it so incredibly uncomfortable for Manchester City. And Manchester City, who we think are the best team in the world, we're having difficulties with that pressure. And the possession was not nearly as clean. And now they're not winning 50-50 challenges. And now they're not building out of the back. They're losing the ball in bad areas. You can do that if you're Arsenal. But you have to have the mindset of actually getting after Manchester City. Now, it's easier said than done. Because when they play through you, now they can expose some of the things in the back line because of the qualities that Manchester City can have in the attack. But don't go out there protecting yourself if you're Arsenal, to be honest with you. If indeed you're going to beat Manchester City, and if indeed you're going to win this title, go and get it. Don't just back your way into it. Go and get it. I think you can be aggressive enough against Manchester City. I know what you're going to tell me. I know what you're going to tell me, Stevie, that, oh, why would you take that risk against Manchester City? Well, this is why I would take that risk if I'm Arsenal. I want to lose. If I'm going to lose, I want to lose playing my game. Not accommodating myself to whatever Manchester City does. I want to dictate if I can and when I can. Not all the time, but I want to dictate when I can. And when I can, I want to take chances to pressure higher. And when I can, I want to be able to force turnovers in bad areas. And when I can, I want to commit numbers forward. I have to be a threat in the attack if I'm Arsenal, if indeed I'm going to have a chance of winning this game.
There's one reason why I disagree with you.
Okay. That's why we're here, Steve.
The game's in Manchester.
Well, I know.
If this game was at Arsenal, I would be thinking along the same lines. And I don't think it's a case of you sit on top of your box and defend. No. You figure out, without being too high and too deep, where your line of confrontation is, and then you go from there. And a lot of it has to do with the fact that against pace, City can't handle it. And so that's the way I would go about it. That's the way I think Arsenal will go about it. I don't see them going. Particularly the fact that Arteta knows exactly what happens to any team generally. There's always the exception, but any team that generally goes to Manchester and tries to play toe-to-toe gets wiped off the map. So, if it's at Arsenal, I'm going to go the alley route. It's not at Arsenal. It's in Manchester.
What I would say is, and my concern is more about the mindset of Arsenal, that they don't just forfeit the ball and forfeit the possession, that you believe in yourself to be good enough to carry the possession sometimes and to carry the game forward sometimes and to push Manchester City because you're good enough to do that. That's all I want. I want a mindset of Arsenal that is not just protecting, that is just sitting back. No, no, you have the players to play in the face of Manchester City. Go ahead and do that because it's part of your personality as a group anyways.
Yeah, obviously we've been talking about the players that are missing for Manchester City, but Arsenal could have some players missing themselves when it comes into this game. We're still waiting to hear if Saka, if Martinelli, if they'll be fit, if Gabriel will. Let's talk about that if we can then, Kieran. How big an impact is that going to be if these players aren't fit enough to start?
I mean, it'll be huge, of course. Obviously, these are like the most influential players, especially Bakayo and Gabriel, especially if Kyle Walker doesn't play. You definitely want Martinelli on there because he's the real threat in behind for Arsenal, and without the pace of Walker, you have to think that he will cause them, you know, a huge amount of problems. I do think they'll be fit. I think that's why Bakayo, you know, rested for international duty. I think the timing of the squad in terms of form and fitness, I think they'll be available. It's nice to see as well, because I think over the last number of years, Arsenal have, you know, never used it as an excuse, but they've always, you know, had big players missing at crucial times in the season. So it's nice to see for a change that, you know, hopefully Arsenal come in with a fully fit squad. And then, of course, it's going to just go down to team selection, you know, and what Mikel decides to pick. But I think that this is the healthiest looking Arsenal team going into a game of this magnitude for a long, long time.
Stuart is going with an Arsenal win for this one. When we take a look at the predictions, let's talk a little bit more about this, Mr. Robson. Why have you got Arsenal winning it?
I think it'd be interesting to see how Arteta starts. Does he play Rice and Odegaard in front of Jorginho, or play him next to Rice next to Jorginho? That would tell us how he wants to go and close the ball down and press the ball. But I just think Arsenal at the moment are playing with confidence. The fact that Walker's not playing and Stones isn't playing, so they haven't got, in recent weeks, Manchester City have had one of their centre-halves, usually Stones, coming into midfield to create that extra body in there. They haven't really got a player to do that in the players that they've got available, unless Lewis plays at right back and does it, but he doesn't do it anywhere near as well as Stones does or Walker does at times. So I just think that Arsenal at the moment are playing with confidence. They can have a fully fit squad. I think Saka will play and he's going to be an absolute threat. Just got that feeling this is Arsenal's season.
Let's take a look at Ali, who's the only one on that list there that said Manchester City would win. And obviously we just saw their stats against Arsenal at the Etihad, but when it comes to top five teams this season, they've not been at their best.
Well, the other way to look at that, Kay, is they're due. they are due for their best performance of the season, and I think that's what it's going to take to beat Arsenal. I would take the words of Stevie Nicol, who said at the Etihad, at Manchester City, it's being played at home. I have to imagine that if there was ever a time for Manchester City to showcase who they are, who we think they are, the best team in Europe, the favorites to win Champions League, this is the moment. If it's not against Arsenal at home, then I don't know when it is. They're due for that best performance that we keep waiting. I think this is the time Manchester City win it at home.
Kieran, is it a title decider?
I think if Arsenal don't win, then they don't win the league. So yeah, in that respect, I think it is a title decider.
If they lose, you're going to send me my money?
Well, okay. This just got real.
Hey? How much was it, Stevie?
You just conceded. $1,555.
Wow.
I mean, 50. Okay, I'll expect a check then.
Is it a title decider?
He can Venmo, you know.
If Arsenal lose, yes, I think so.
Yeah. I agree with Kieran.
Yeah.
What about you, Mr. Robson? Title decider?
I think it could be the title decider, yes. If Arsenal win, I think they will go and win the title. If Arsenal lose, I think it gives Manchester City far more confidence. I think they will then have a good end to the season. But we've got to remember Liverpool as well. They're in the race. They're not out of it so far. They're still a very good side. So it's not quite a title decider, but if Arsenal lose, I think they probably won't have a chance.
If you'd like to hear more from Stuart.
Meant, right? Huh? That's what we meant.
Yeah.
Talking about all topics from
yourself,
world football. You can check him out on the
Stewie's everywhere.
It's just dropped. Make sure to go and check that out wherever you get your podcasts.
Much better dress and gas.
Kieran's going to be back on Extra Time with us a little later on.
Right.
Yeah, that was a fun moment last night. You can catch up to date with all the latest Extra Times over on our YouTube channel.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy. So go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
Wednesday night on ABC, Brittany Griner, for the first time since being released from a Russian prison, shares her story.
You've been told to go through your bag, and you felt...
Felt the cartridge.
What were you thinking at that moment when you felt that?
My life is over right here.
Her sentence.
Just been told you're going to be 9 years in one of the worst prisons in Russia.
I was just so scared for everything, because there's just so much unknown.
Brittany Griner, Robin Roberts, Prisoner in Russia. Wednesday night at 10, 9 central on ABC.
Just taking a look at the top of La Liga as Spanish football returns this weekend, and we have got a big clash as Real Madrid will take on Athletic. Athletic, who've been standout so far this season. As you can see, they are ahead of Atleti in the table and in the fourth spot there. Ali Moreno, how much of a test is this going to be for the league leaders?
Well, big test. And we saw early on in the season when they played Real Madrid, went away to Athletic Club, we started to see the influence of Jude Bellingham and the impact of Jude Bellingham in the attacking half inside the 10-yard box scoring goals. Now, Jude Bellingham hasn't been around for the last couple of games because he was thrown out. And when that controversial red card, regardless, we need to see Jude Bellingham get back to that, to being the impactful player in the attacking 18-yard box. The goals have sort of dried up, which we sort of expected, but I think the performances have dropped as well. They're not to the level to what it was in the earlier part of the season. Maybe this time in which he wasn't particularly off because he went and played with England, but the fact that he wasn't playing for Real Madrid leading up to the international break, maybe that gives you a little bit of perspective, a different thought process, freshens you as a player mentally and physically. And
no, Vinny.
I was talking about Jude Bellingham. I was painting a pretty picture for Real Madrid. No, I thought you were a Real Madrid fan.
I'm trying to hammer home the point of your point about Jude Bellingham.
I don't really feel like you were hammering my point. You're taking away from Real Madrid. Yes, the absence of Vini will be a major problem for Real Madrid in this game. Hence why the presence of Jude Bellingham has to be much more so than just passing the ball in the attacking half or having an impact outside the 18-yard box. He has to have an impact as a goal scorer for this team once again.
I didn't know Dan was working today.
Well, I don't know.
I was on your side that time.
Was it?
I was on your side that time. And you contradicted yourself, so I was just putting you in check, all right? Barcelona also take on Las Palmas, and the good times seem to be rolling with Barcelona before the international break hit. So you can see how things turn out in that game on Saturday and how things turn out for both of them, because Las Palmas haven't been so bad themselves this season. And that will do it for the latest.
A bold statement, wasn't it?
What? So it looks like they're going...
Promotion lately.
Well, it looks that way. It looks that way, Stevie. All right, stick around. Extra time coming off. Everybody's been arguing a little bit here today.
I wouldn't say everybody.
I did not kick it off.
Yes, you did.
I did not kick it off.
I don't want to point the finger, but...
Dan Thomas ways.
No, you made an argument for Xabi Alonso to pretty much go to Bayern right now, and then you made the
what
same...
Whoa. I made an argument for to go where?
Why he should have maybe gone to Bayern with the chance coming now, right?
I never said that at all.
Or Liverpool. Did you or did you not?
You need to go and watch his back.
Did you or did you not
say... I didn't even mention I'm going to Bayern
come around again.
I never mentioned to anybody other than Liverpool.
Right, okay. But then you
said just talking about Bayern.
Oh, so it's Liverpool, you meant, right?
You talked about him going to Bayern. What are you talking about?
Bayern and Liverpool into Xabi Alonso.
Right.
But then when we asked you, have Liverpool lost out by Xabi Alonso not going? I pretty much made the point of why you shouldn't go.
You said, have Liverpool lost out? So my answer was based on, have Liverpool lost out? I never even mentioned Bayern Munich.
Rewind the tape. Rewind the tape and you guys can go to
Yeah,
see
clean
it.
Your ears out. I said, clean your ears out.
Hey? Even if you were here, none of this would be going on.
I was going to say, I feel like I need to get back over there.
Yeah, you do need to get back over here. And it's not worth arguing with Steve.
Hey, Kim, get over here and sit there.
Right, first question.
I don't know if Kieran appreciates the fact that when you're sitting next to Stevie and he... When he gets going, the first automatic move is this. And then lean forward.
Yeah, I know the lean. I know the. I feel the lean. I can feel it.
It's trademark. Shoulders. This is trademark.
Shaka said it the other day that you're all ready to answer.
Yeah. Yeah, he's on the blocks. You're on the blocks, Steve.
I'll try and sit back a bit.
That's not going to work. And it's not going to last.
Okay, first question. For all, should more managers take a similar approach to what Xabi Alonso is choosing to do? Staying at a club that you've built some success with instead of jumping ship to a bigger club when it's not a guarantee that things will work out?
No.
That's it?
No, should they? No. For all the reasons I said.
Why?
Because he's... Honestly, it's... The way people are talking is as if every 6 months or every other day or every other week you get offered one of the biggest jobs in football. Real Madrid, Liverpool and Bayern Munich. I mean, three of the biggest jobs in football. They don't come along every day. They don't. And so when you get an opportunity... OK, as I said in the show, I understand... All right, I've only been coaching for 12 months, blah, blah, I might not be ready, blah, blah. I mean, OK, all right, I get all that. Everybody gets that. But the most important thing is, if you turn that down, you might never get it again.
You didn't need him at Liverpool anyway, though.
Who said that? See, there we go.
Stevie!
You need your filter sorted out.
How worried are you that you may lose your bet with Kieran?
Well, let's be honest, right?
By the way, you're back. You're back.
Hi. Sorry, I'll sit back. Hold on, I'll sit back. Right, let's be honest, right? If you went to the bookies and said, I want to put a bet on, right, I'm going to take Man City or Liverpool and you can have Arsenal. What kind of odds would I get? I wouldn't get good odds, would I? So, of course, I'm happy. I've got two of the three runners. So I've got two chances of winning this. He's only got one. So clearly I'm in the best position and they're playing Man City on Sunday. Absolutely, I'm in a pole seat. I am. I'm in the final furlong. I'm getting ready. I'm looking behind me and I can't see anybody coming. That's where I am.
We should have asked that question the other way around. It should have been, Kieran, how worried are you that you may lose your bet with Stevie?
Do you know what? It was a wild bet. It was a wild bet. I got caught up in the moment. You know, to go against every other team in the Premier League was silly. But, you know, the position that I've got myself in
silly
now,
really.
I'd happily take a double or quits if you want one, Stevie, at this point.
No, I don't need the money. You're all right.
Kieran, simple question. Would you prefer Arsenal not winning the remainder of their Premier League games, but they win the Champions League, or beat City this Sunday, then win the Prem, but buy and win the Champions League tie against Arsenal 10-0 on aggregate?
All right. That's a lot. That's a lot.
I would take the Prem. I would take the Prem this year, just because I feel that will shift the narrative completely over the club, and it will give Arsenal a platform to actually. I think that if they win it this season, they could go and dominate for a number of seasons. So I'm going to take the Prem.
Even with the 10-0 loss.
Even with the 10-0 loss.
But, you know, they've never won Champions League. I'm just saying. It's never happened.
We also have another little gripe to pick up with Kieran. Kieran, what was your prediction for the weekend, City and Arsenal?
It was 1-1.
1-1. Is this a must-win, though, for you, for Arsenal?
No, it's not a must-win. It's not a must-win. I'll take a draw all day.
And not just a must-not-lose.
Yeah.
All right.
I don't think they lose.
You know who really likes that result? Liverpool.
Yes, please.
This guy.
Twice on Sunday. Oh, it is Sunday.
Yeah.
For Kieran, what is the key matchup that will decide the Man City Arsenal game?
I'm gonna go middle of the park. I mean, if I'm to pick one player against one player, then I'm gonna say probably De Bruyne and Declan Rice. Because I think if you look at the game last season at the Etihad, there were too many times that the game became so open for Arsenal, and City were just able to just drive at the back four of Arsenal, and it just caused them way too many problems. And I think that with Declan in there, he has the ability to nullify a lot of those City attacks. And then obviously De Bruyne is always at the heart of Man City's attack. So I think if Declan has, you know, one of his outstanding, I mean, he's been outstanding all season, but if he has another outstanding game, I think he will be the key to defending, Arsenal's back line and giving them a chance of getting a result.
Roy, my question to Ale Moreno, what are the key factors that can lead Real Madrid to overcome the challenges against Manchester City in both legs?
Carlo, listen to me. Listen. We got to hang on to the ball, baby. We cannot give them the ball. But guess what? They're going to keep the ball. And so if they keep the ball, then we got to defend. But our two center backs are out. Okay, and our goalkeeper, yeah, he was supposed to come back, but no, that knee's not where it needs to be, so he's injured. He's not coming back. That means that we're defending with what is not our first choice in terms of team selection. We have no chances, what that is. Carlo, we have no chance. We have no chance. We got to hang on and hang on and hang on defensively and hope that we can force turnovers in bad areas and catch Manchester City on the counter. And if we do, Vini's got to be at his best. Bellingham's got to be at his best. Rodrigo's got to be at his best. Joselu's got to be at his best. Maybe we have a chance, Carlo. Maybe we do.
You know they're going to make a lot of you say we.
He's talking about Real Madrid, isn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I know.
You sure you don't mix it up with Real Betis?
What's that?
You think they've got as little chance is what you've just said.
Yeah, but I turned it around. Didn't you see then? It was dramatic, Stevie.
Oh, you lost me.
An inspirational speech from Moreno.
Actually, you know where I went? Where I went was just get one of the managers to say the same speech to both teams, because Pep could say that as well. That's where I went. That's why I missed the last bit.
Okay.
Just telling you.
What I was saying is that people would be saying that they didn't have a chance, and then that's what you use if you're Real Madrid, because there is an opportunity, slim as it may be, there is an opportunity to trouble.
I can't imagine Real Madrid very often. The team talk is, they don't rate us, they don't think we're very good. Yeah, we're party poofers, let's go and spoil the party. Well, I can't imagine Real Madrid have done that a lot, Reece, have they?
Yeah, but they got destroyed by Manchester City last season in Champions League.
I know.
A better version of Real Madrid, mind you.
I know, but City's got the problems as well.
All right.
That okay. They didn't have then.
Who's going to win the tie?
I think City are favourites, but I wouldn't suggest that Real Madrid have all of a sudden turned into Real Betis.
Okay.
Would be my argument.
Why do you hate Betis?
Huh? I don't hate Betis.
Oh,
I think they're
like
a lovely
like
club. They're a lovely family club, but unfortunately...
A family club.
Stevie, it doesn't say this, but I'm just going to say, now that it's not going to be Xabi Alonso, who would you rather as Liverpool coach? De Zerbi, Thomas Frank, Amorim or Nagelsmann?
Where's De Zerbi? Oh, he is. From. Yeah. Of those names, I would feel more confident right now with De Zerbi. For the main fact that he knows what the Premier League's about and he knows what Liverpool's about, or he's certainly been closer to it because of his time in the Premier League. So I would suggest De Zerbi out of all of those names.
OK.
I would be more confident of getting success.
Who's next on that list? Oof.
Well, I don't think Thomas Frank's the answer, I'll be honest. I think he's done a great job with Brentford, but he's not the answer. I quite like the way that Amorim plays the game as well. I would go with Amorim after De Zerbi. Nagelsmann worries me that his time in Germany, a lot of the talk was about how he changes things all the time. There's one thing to try things, but there comes a point where you've got to figure out the best solutions generally that work. You can't just keep changing and changing and changing. So I would go De Zerbi, I would go Amorim, I would go then Nagelsmann and then Thomas Frank.
You know what worries me about Nagelsmann, if I were a Liverpool fan, is that I feel like Julian Nagelsmann is the sort of guy that can get in a boardroom and give you one heck of a presentation. And I mean one heck of a presentation. It's PowerPoint everywhere and slides and the thing, and he can talk yourself to death to the point to where you're like, wow, this guy really knows. And he really has the answers.
Do you know what? I think there are... there'll be too many clubs fall for that. Mm. I just get the feeling that Liverpool, the way they're going about it is, we're not interested in all that. We know what you do. All the proofs in black and white on the paper. We're going to decide who we take, and we're not going to be getting swayed by somebody giving a bullet point presentation.
Well, I hope
they're
not
going to decide this is our guy, and that's it. Without all that nonsense.
I love those bullet point presentations.
You wouldn't believe the amount of people that get jobs because of that, who don't know what they're talking about when it comes to playing football.
Not just a flipboard like you, Steve.
Oh, seriously.
Okay, Kieran, everybody is raving about Kobbie Mainoo. Isn't it fair that Ten Hag should be given credit for his role in developing and nurturing young talent?
I mean, he should be given credit, but I don't think he had much of a choice because of the state that Man United were in. However, I will say that I think he definitely is the real deal, Kobbie Mainoo. I've really liked him ever since he's come into the Man United team. Super talent. I think he's going to have an illustrious career and international level and club level. So it's really good to see. I think he's probably the... you know, we haven't seen a player like him in an England team in particular for a long, long time. I would say decades. I mean, you know, Jack Wilshere was probably the closest type of player towards him. And unfortunately, you know, just injuries let him down. But I think that with Kobbie, he has the ability to really change this this national team. And it's exciting to see, really exciting.
He did a couple of turns in the international break and during those matches in really tight spaces. It's Wembley, it's national team, it's Brazil or Belgium or whoever it may be. And it doesn't matter who he's playing against. And that sort of personality, that sort of confidence. And then it's one thing to have confidence, but some of these young players sometimes have hollow confidence because they can't quite produce performances consistently. And what I like about Kobbie Mainoo more than anything else is there's a level of consistency. Not only is there quality, not only is there confidence, but there's consistency to his performances. I'm with Kieran. I think this guy's great.
Why did you scoff at the question?
Well, I'll tell you why. Because I'm with everybody else. Kobbie Mainoo has been an absolute breath of fresh air. And again, I was thinking the same things watching England against Brazil. Some of the things he did. For a kid in his first game, pretty much. And it's Brazil at Wembley, full house. But the bit I was scoffing at is, if that's the case, why did Ten Hag, halfway through the season, bring in Amrabat to play in the middle of the park? If he saw this kid was so good, why did he bring in Amrabat? Can somebody enlighten me? Because if he clearly saw this kid was that good, why would he bring in Amrabat halfway through the season? That's my point about trying to give Ten Hag credit. I mean, the kid deserves most of the credit for himself because he's been put in a bad team and he's absolutely helped them. And for a kid of his age and his lack of experience to step on the field at Old Trafford in a Man United jersey with the expectation of that and produce what he has done. I'm sorry, most of it's down to the kid himself.
And by the way, not only step into Old Trafford Manchester jersey, Manchester United jersey, but with the house on fire,
yeah.
Right? With pressure, with needing to get results, and people looking at you like, well, I guess he's the solution now. And to actually be part of the solution instead of being part of the problem, that says a lot about the player.
Yeah, looks like it's happening the same for the England team as well with Gareth Southgate. Okay. This could be the solution.
Okay. Yeah.
All right, for Kieran, rank these Arsenal number sevens. Bukayo Saka, Alexis Sanchez, Thomas Rosicki and Robert Pires.
I'm going to go Robert Pires, Saka, Sanchez, Rosicki.
Okay.
See, that's a tough question.
So,
in terms of importance, let's change the question around. In terms of importance to the team, you have to go with Saka. Arsenal are a completely different team without Saka. That Arsenal team that Pires played in, if he didn't play, they still have won the Premier League, they still have won all the trophies. So it's a tough question, that. As great as Robert Pires was, it's hard to look past Bukayo Saka in terms of importance, right?
Is that how you rank it then, when it comes to importance and... rather than just the individual.
Well, no, because there's different ways to look at it. You know, there's the best player, who scored the most goals. But as far as importance to the team, that's why I'm saying Robert Pires wasn't as important to that Arsenal team he played in as Bukayo Saka is an importance to this Arsenal team right now.
That's all right. I'm taking Alexis Sanchez above all of them, but there you go.
He was brilliant, and he
was in some ways unfortunate that he didn't quite have the structure of a team around him back then that Arsenal does now. Alexis Sanchez, people forget how good he was for Arsenal, and how at times it was Alexis Sanchez and 10 other players because of how productive and important in 1v1 situation, creating chances for himself, for others. When you played against that team, he was really focused on trying to stop Alexis Sanchez, and you stop a lot of what Arsenal does.
Last question is for Kieran, although it's a nice one for all of you. Kieran, who's the one opponent you faced that always gave you a problem?
I'm going to say Eden Hazard.
Tell us, Mark. Tell us why.
He was the best player I've played against in my whole career. He was just unstoppable. He was one of the players that before we would come up against Chelsea as a team, and we never really used to speak about individual opponents at all. He's the one player that the whole team would be talking about, which tells you a lot, because you know the players that I was playing with at that time were, you know, at the top of their game and playing at a very, very high level. So, I mean, that season, I don't know when it was, 2015, maybe 2015, I think, where he just won the league. He was just unbelievable. It was virtuoso. He single-handedly carried Chelsea to a Premier League title that season. And you just couldn't get near him.
There was a 2 or 3 year period with Eden Hazard in which 1v1 situations, he slowed you down and then would cut to the inside or go to the outside or take you on or whatever, and you couldn't do anything. He was, and I'm not afraid in saying this, in that 2 or 3 year period of time, he was the best player in the whole wide world in 1v1 situation and the sort of duels that as a defender you had no chance, and you knew you had no chance, and he knew you had no chance. Then after that, I don't know. We lost him. But for that period of time, he was some kind of special.
Is there anyone that stands out in terms of opponents that you faced that were always a problem?
Every center back ever in the history of mankind.
Anybody with pace?
Yes.
Stevie, same question.
Told you, Gordillo, what was his first name?
Gordillo, yes.
What was his first name?
I don't remember his first name. I just remember his name, Gordillo.
Yeah, Gordillo, he played for Real Madrid.
Yeah.
Played against him for Scotland. We played Spain at Hampden. Qualifying for the 86 World Cup. Couldn't work him out. I mean, I'd never seen the guy. I knew nothing about him before we played them. And I couldn't work him out. He's the only guy I've never been able to work out.
Really, the only one?
All right.
Well, and part of what made him a really difficult player to play against was, if you looked at him...
Oh, he didn't look like...
Doesn't quite look like that kind of player. And he would play with his socks down to his ankles, and it's just kind of sort of a tall, lanky legs. And then all of a sudden he would get going, and you just... It was like awkward angles, elbows everywhere, arms are kind of flying, and yet he's by you. He was a difficult
player. You know, like a boxer, where they're coming away over here and hitting you from different angles.
Yeah.
His shoulders throw you all over the place. Just physically, the way he was made up. You know, generally when you're playing against somebody and they do things the first time you come up against them, then you go, right, okay. There's little pointers and signs. But this guy's shoulders were all over the shop and his legs were all over the shop. I could never figure out if he did that, he was going to go that way, or if he did this, he was doing that. Couldn't work it out. Yeah. Couldn't work it out.
It was
incredible.
Thank you. Thank you so much for your questions. We'll do it all again tomorrow. Big weekend ahead. Make sure to be with us on ESPN FC.
Can you imagine him on the dance floor?
Oh, well, he could break it down. I'm sure he could break it down.
Wednesday night on ABC, Brittany Griner, for the first time since being released from a Russian prison, shares her story.
You've been told to go through your bag, and you felt...
Felt the cartridge.
What were you thinking at that moment when you felt that?
My life is over right here.
Her sentence.
Just been told you're going to be 9 years in one of the worst prisons in Russia.
I was just so scared for everything, because there's just so much unknown.
Brittany Griner, Robin Roberts, Prisoner in Russia. Wednesday night at 10, 9 central on ABC.